So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Oh, I saw X-Men last night.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Fucking good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I really liked it. I really liked that. I mean, I'm an X-Men fan anyway, so like I think I saw
X-Men 1 and 2. I never saw 3 and I didn't see Wolverine.
You missed the shitty ones, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wolverine sucks too.
3 sucked really bad as well. I won't spoil it for you, but
what's the deal when they go to recruit Wolverine? He doesn't want to join them at first cuz he has the cameo in the movie.
Well, they recruit Wolverine at the very beginning, right? Oh, you mean
yeah, but then he's not in like the first class.
Yeah, he's not. He was never in the first class. He was, like, in the comic books, he didn't join the X-Men until, like, years, like 10 or 15 years
after. And is that
what
Wolverine covers when he joins?
No. This is Wolverine's life before the X-Men.
Oh, so he joins before the first movie and after
the
Wolverine?
The first movie is when he joins. That's when they track him down. That's when they decide.
Oh, I thought, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
The very first movie is really centered around Wolverine and him joining the X-Men. But, the Wolverine movie is just about Wolverine, how he became to be the guy with the claws and, like, you know, with the adamantium skeleton. It's really, like, his life before the X-Men.
And it sucks.
Will.i.am's in it. Like, as a mutant, so that might tell you something. Some of the things in the movie were questionable, but, yeah, I mean, I'm an X-Men fan, so like I'd watch it anyway, but it wasn't one of the best movies that they've done. That's all. There are some cool scenes. That's about it. I've been reading like the actual comic book though about his origin. It's awesome, man. Yeah, you're not gonna keep this in.
My mind's bent. Do you know who I am?
My name is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
First I would rescue Ring Jim to my throne.
Then I beat Jim McMahon all in one night.
My mind is
spent. Nobody deserves to be more famous than DDP. I am a man's man. I am a champion of champions.
I am
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Would you please shut the hell up?
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. John Pollock, and I'm joined this week by Wei Ting.
Yeah, you're joined every week by...
I know, I was just joking around.
Oh.
How are you doing?
Good. Pretty good. That's pretty, great. Pretty good.
You have a good week?
Yeah. I haven't had a coffee in a week. I just felt kind of off.
Really?
Yeah.
Why... Did you just make a conscious choice not to have any?
I really don't drink coffee outside of this podcast, and I haven't had a chance to because we've been doing all the podcasts from like home. So I've had no need.
Is it weird that I have coffee when we are doing the show late at night as well? Decaf.
Not weird.
It's tough though because I'll pour some, and once I finish it, I can't just get up and go get like more.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, you should get somebody.
I got a giant...
You should get an assistant, a volunteer.
Review-away intern.
Yeah, if you would like to go to John Pollock's house at 2 a.m. on Monday nights.
And just pour me coffee.
Job's out there.
And maybe you can have like a runner just to go grab you coffees when we're doing the show here.
Okay,
so that we're both set.
Put that on a resume. Coffee runner for
runner.
A wrestling podcast.
No, no, no. But you can always dress stuff up in resumes. You're like
assistant.
Executive production assistant.
Sure. Liaison to the...
resumes are such bullshit to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at my resume. I just recently was like taking a look at it. I haven't updated my resume in years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like... I don't know how I would trust if I was hiring someone for like a. The fuck just happened? Sorry, we're having a party outside of our office right now, and even though you put the red light on, it doesn't seem to matter. Yeah, resumes we were talking about. Not a big fan of them to begin with. I just find it so. It's just like, okay, here's a. This fucking computer, dude. We're gonna have to cut this.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So after some computer difficulties, we are back now, everybody. Apparently, I'm gonna have to touch my fucking mouse pad every like 10 seconds so my computer doesn't shut down. This is the new and improved
computer.
Dude, just
I could fix that for you in like 2 seconds. Just go to learn to use the control panel. You learn to customize your machines.
Okay. Well, it's never shut down before, so I've never had this issue before. So I don't think it's just a simple.
Really?
Let's shut down.
Put your control panel. Set whatever you want to never.
Not exactly 2 seconds, okay, but 20.
Oh, that's when it's plugged in. When it's on battery, I also want never.
We should have a technology podcast with John Pollock.
Be fun. How do you turn this on? All right, Wade. 2001 King of the Ring.
Yes.
Quickly update everybody.
Combos Snacks presents.
Combos Really Fast Foods.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Combos before or after this event?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't. Is it a U.S. thing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we don't have them in Canada, but they're just disgusting little cookie cracker-like things with cheese and shit.
Sounds absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
What do you remember about this? I remember being, I finished 11th grade right around this time.
Well,
so
then
that
I,
means you would have as well.
Yeah, yeah, because we are the same age. What do I remember about this show? I remember just that one match. That's all. And I remember
people... Do you watch this event, or was this the first time you watched this?
It was my first time watching the whole event, but yeah, I watched that match, of course. After it happened, everybody was talking about it. The Shane McMahon-Kurt Angle match, everybody was talking about it afterwards, and they ended up airing it on a best of. The WWE for this year, they aired like a best top 10 countdown.
I remember that at the end of that year, and that was 2001 where they had a lot of good matches.
There were so many good matches.
They had to edit them down, obviously, for TV, but yeah, they did like a top 10 thing at the end of the year, and you had like that in the ring. 01 was maybe their best year. 01-02, those were some solid years.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, you had the WWE, you had the best WrestleMania X7 right before this with three almost perfect matches in that.
That's as bad as the Invasion stuff was. I always like think about it with a silver lining that there were some awesome matches back then.
Well, not during the Invasion itself. Talking about
the peak.
Like they peaked right before the Invasion.
What do you mean?
I mean the company.
Oh, the company peaked. Yes. I'm just talking about like in the ring. I remember from the SummerSlam that year, the Austin Angle match. That's like that was just such an awesome match. I love that match.
Yeah, we'll have to review that one.
But let's review this first, everybody. I'm going to preface this by saying, I'll save it for the end. I have a lot of thoughts on this show.
Okay.
Some negative. And they start off, they're from East Rutherford, New Jersey at the Continental Airlines Arena. And do you know what would be taking place at the Continental Airlines Arena 5 days after this?
A UFC.
UFC 32.
Wow.
Be with Tito Ortiz and Elvis Sinisek.
You're kidding.
Which I ordered on pay-per-view.
Tito Ortiz, who we just saw fight his final fight. Losing to...
You didn't actually think Ortiz was going to win that fight, did you, on Saturday?
I didn't know. I had hoped, but after what we saw...
I just hope this is the end for him now.
Okay? I hope so, too. And I hope
He was owned.
Yeah, he was just destroyed.
So,
but a gutsy performance.
Yes.
The speech afterwards was just even better.
And that's a perfect way to end it, you know? Perfect way to bookend your career, you know? You have your final fight against Ryan Bader, and then you listen to John and Wei review King of the Ring 5 days before your title defense against Elvis Sinisek, back when you were the light heavyweight champion.
Okay, wow.
Anyway, just an interesting note there for our New Jersey fans, such as Ahmad, who maybe was at this show. Who knows?
Doubt it.
We should have asked him that on Thursday.
He just had a birthday. The guy's quite young.
How old is he?
He's 23.
That's not that young. We're 27.
You would have been 13 at the time of this show.
Yeah, you never went to wrestling when you were 13?
I didn't.
I went to my first show when I was 13.
Oh, yeah?
I was 13 for when I went to my first show.
Well, then he could have been at this show.
Yeah, Wei mentioned combos, really fast foods, and the opening video... kind of demonic. It's like the King of the Ring throne is like an electric chair.
Yeah.
So it says, my mind is broken, as they showed clips of Chris Benoit.
It also, I guess maybe...
this is a weird coincidence, but...
That's looking too deep into it.
No. I'm not saying that. That is completely ridiculous. But this event took place on June 24th of 2001, and it was June 24th of 2007, that was the Friday of the weekend where everything happened.
Okay.
I'm pointing out a
yeah, I know,
fact
I know.
Here.
This is interesting.
But anyway. Anyway, they show the electric chair.
What are they trying to say? If you win this King of the Ring, no good will come of it.
Well, Edge did have to retire early.
And Billy Gunn ended up hosting the show from WWE New York.
That would be worse than retiring early.
Yeah.
Billy Gunn on this show. Oh, my God. I guarantee he was high during that segment.
Okay. Yeah, let's get into it.
They go over the main angles for tonight. We've got Austin defending the title in a three-way. Kurt Angle is going into this event saying he's going to win all three matches that he's in, including winning his second consecutive or his second King of the Ring, and that Diamond Dallas Page is going to call out The Undertaker. So our announcers for tonight, I totally forgot about this, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman at this point in time. Mm-hmm. You always just assume this time period that's Jerry Lawler, but you... that 9-month period, you had Paul Heyman in there, so that's always a positive.
Yeah.
And Diamond Dallas Page comes out to start the show, and they showed clips from this past Monday on Raw where he revealed himself to be the Stalker. Now, why would they reveal this on Monday? Wouldn't that have been a nice little hook that the Stalker will reveal himself at the pay-per-view and he's going to call out The Undertaker?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that had been what they had been building for like a month here with these weird, you know?
Sure.
Voyeuristic videos of Sarah.
Perhaps they were caring about TV more so than the pay-per-view.
No, I guarantee you that's why. But that's...
And they thought the reveal probably would do more for TV than it would for buys. I don't know. I don't know what the mentality is.
Diamond Dallas Page comes out and he tells The Undertaker that he has arrived. And Taker shouldn't be mad because the footage of Sarah that he has shown thus far is only the PG stuff. And the other stuff gets more than a thumbs up. And he says he's going to kick the big dog's ass all over his yard. And then tomorrow night, he will become the first WCW performer to step foot in Madison Square Garden and shows a ticket that he has bought to tonight's show. He got front row tickets to this show, eh?
And he got his own entrance music.
Amazing. That's what happens when you buy singles just a few hours before the show outside.
You get to choose your own music.
Yep. Ticketmaster takes care of you. And this was great because he goes to sit in the front row and a fan runs up to him and puts his hand out to shake his hand. And DDP just shakes his hand and just like nods at him.
Yeah, which I... Yeah, which looks...
You're playing a heel here.
Exactly.
Well, I would have fucking just, like, slapped them or something. Not, you probably can't hit a kid, but you could at least do something heelish here.
There are so many things that are just wrong with this, okay?
This entire pay-per-view is a booking clusterfuck.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Diamond Dallas Page is aligned with WCW here, okay? Let's just keep track, okay? Mm-hmm. Because you need to keep track on this show. Okay. It's extremely confusing.
Do you want to share our thoughts about just this angle right now, or do you want to wait?
Oh, let's wait till it climaxes.
Sure. All right. There's lots to say.
Lots and lots. So we go to Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, and they discuss a rumor that's been making its way through the locker room that Kelly.
Yes.
No. That Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit have been negotiating with WCW and are going to leave with the title tonight.
This was a late storyline.
This was like the first you heard of this was on the pay-per-view or maybe Sunday Night Heat.
There's no addressing of this storyline in
Nor did I have any interest in this. And I'm saying this at the time, which did not the fact like I did not care at all. It's like, okay, they're going to go to WCW. We're going to take a former WCW person who left and is now going to go back there. It was like already at this point, it was like that means nothing.
Yeah.
And if that means nothing of a WWF guy jumping to WCW, not a good start.
Yeah, I know. And
I thought this pay-per-view was really the signal that this invasion was not going to work because this was so convoluted at times.
Mm-hmm. I would understand this better if they were building to some swerve at least. I almost for a second while watching this show thought that this was the pay-per-view where Austin turned and joined the Alliance, but then I realized it wasn't, and I just kept asking, what the fuck was the point? What was the point of
this? Was
all
one of those
sketches?
Where this led to nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely no payoff to this. It was just to maybe we don't have enough faith in trying to sell this show. We'll put this on heat for last-minute buys of people thinking you're going to get a big angle at the end like you thought.
Yeah.
And
nothing.
They gave you nothing as a result. So you probably left someone even more upset knowing that they'd spent $30 and got nothing.
And anytime, if there's anything to be learned from the CM Punk angle this week, less is more, you know? Anytime they mention something so much, anytime they try, like this WCW angle, for instance, they keep going back to interviewers interviewing Jericho and Benoit about it. Anytime they've put so much attention on it, it just takes you out of it because you realize it's bullshit.
Kurt Angle takes on Christian in the semifinals of the King of the Ring. We just had the final four on pay-per-view. And Heyman runs down how Bret Hart, Ken Shamrock, Steve Austin, and Triple H have all been unable to repeat as King of the Ring, but tonight Angle is going to attempt that feat. And the match starts off, big slam by a wrestling takedown slam by Kurt Angle, and then he stomps Christian in the corner. Angle runs sternum first into the corner, and then he's working for the ankle lock, but Christian avoids it. This was the first, like, really weird, like, just the dynamic here. You had two heels here in this match.
Well, you actually had four heels. They were all...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All four of the final four were
all
heels here.
And they were all aligned. I don't know how close they were aligned by this point, but yeah, they were all kind of... Yeah, I would you say Edge was a heel at this point, though?
He was starting to, like... starting the turn, but he was still a heel at this point, nonetheless.
Technically. And, of course, this was just weeks before Christian would fully turn heel and split with Edge. It was because of this win that they split.
They kept this out for the whole summer. It wasn't until September when he actually turned.
Oh,
it was
right.
At that... He was at the Raw or SmackDown taping in Toronto. I remember in September.
But I'm just remembering that scene where Christian took the trophy.
I know because Edge carried that around all summer, the Stanley Cup.
Oh right.
They actually did
Christian carried this.
Christian carried it. Yeah. And it was like Edge. Yes. Yeah. He basically would just walk around with the trophy. It was actually I was amazed that they, you know, without the brand split at the time, too. You had these guys on, you know, like two shows a week, and they were able to keep it till September. And then they did, like, two matches on pay-per-view, and that was it.
Nonetheless, they're planting the seeds here.
Yes, yes. And that had been a plan for a long time to break these two up. Like, a year and a half before they wanted to break them up after WrestleMania 2000. And they ended up just, they turned them heel, and they started to click as the heel unit, and they just kept keeping them together. But at this point, they were ready to break them off. So anyway, we had the two heels in the match, but it leads to a Let's Go Angle chant, despite Christian, who kind of just worked as the babyface in this match.
He was the clear underdog to Kurt Angle, who's playing, you know, the kind of the monster, the technical monster here.
Christian is sent off the top turnbuckle and hits the barricade on the floor. And Paul Heyman starts talking about the street fight coming up later tonight, stating that the street fight rules favor Shane McMahon. I couldn't believe that fucking line. Like, I understand that's Shane McMahon's gimmick.
Yeah.
Oh, am I going to rant on Shane McMahon on this show? Fuck it. And, oh, speaking of which, Shane comes down to the ring. And, of course, Angle had to stare at him. He's upset. He misses a moonsault. Christian gets a near fall. Then Angle gets an ankle lock, but Christian grabs the referee and gets to the ropes. Then Angle goes for the angle slam, but Christian counters with the unprettier. Goes for the pin, but Shane pulls Christian off, and then Shane does his little dance and runs off. So Christian is looking at Shane all confused from the apron, and then from the apron, Angle's on the other side, delivers the angle slam into the middle of the ring, gets the win. I thought this was just so disconnected here, where you had... First, we open the show with the heel WCW member who is aligned with Shane McMahon, the babyface, who runs out and basically is the heel here who, like...
Well, he was the babyface here.
Well, he was the babyface, but this was, like, he came out to help Kurt win. Yeah. I'm sorry. This is too confusing for pro wrestling.
Right. Yes. Where do we begin? This whole thing was a mess from the beginning. It was a mess from the beginning. And
if it was just these two out there clean doing a match, I'm sure it would have been fine. But the fact both were heels, you had this stupid Shane McMahon run in, and we had just seen Diamond Dallas Page. It's like their goal in the opening with DDP is to get people to hate this guy. And by association then, should that not trigger... Your hatred for Shane McMahon. It was like we were going to have heels and baby faces at WCW before even establishing this group from the get-go.
Yeah. It just seemed like, and this was a problem with this match too, it just seemed like they were focusing on too many storylines that were crossing over at once.
Yeah, way too much bleeding.
They weren't sure which direction they wanted to go with. Here, you wanted to tell the story of Christian. I mean, the King of the Ring itself should have been a story that should have been focused on. I mean, these guys trying to win this prestigious thing. Yet, I found most of these matches to just serve as backdrops for either the Christian Edge storyline or the Shane McMahon storyline.
Now, I will say, I'm not a fan of the run in here and the whole. I think the bleeding of storylines was a major problem on this show. But at least from a logic sense here, it made sense that Shane wanted Kurt to win because then Kurt has a second match tonight before the street fight. So that at least made sense.
That was the whole
point. But I just found this was like, you know, you have Christian fucking the heel to help the other heel. And it was just, I don't know, I found it really annoying.
Right. I think the biggest problem is just the lack of planning with the DDP angle from the beginning. Other than that, I think this could have been fine.
Yeah, the whole DDP thing to me, that whole thing was a television angle. And I don't know how many people would have bought a pay-per-view for a confrontation. I could see people bing for the reveal on pay-per-view. People love reveals, especially when you knew all these WCW guys were negotiating.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone was a bit of a drawing point. Anyway, so Kurt Angle advances, and we go backstage. Steve Austin is with Deborah in his locker room. Jonathan Coachman walks in for his thoughts on the main event, and Austin is asking where Vince McMahon is. Coach reminds him that Vince told you on SmackDown he wasn't going to be at the pay-per-view. So Vince didn't even care about this pay-per-view. And he asked...
Even though it was just in New Jersey and he was in Connecticut.
Take the night off. Come on. It's only King of the Ring. And he asks about Benoit and Jericho and the rumors. And Austin just gives him this blank stare. And we go back to Jim Ross and Paul Heyman. And they throw to a video recapping the DDP Undertaker feud. And Jim Ross was given this line to intro the video. Let's show you how this whole perverse voyeuristic saga unfolded. And we go to the video of the Undertaker and DDP confrontation. They had this like knockoff of the Psycho theme in the background, and they had the Black Scorpion voiceover,
which was really Vince.
Fuck, that was gonna be my trivia question.
Oh,
for
I'm sorry.
You're on top of shit, Way. I shouldn't even try at times.
No,
you do your homework.
I know. I just remembered this. I remember being on there message boards and people.
Yeah, someone online like actually just took the actual voice and just
pitched it down.
Yeah, and revealed it was Vince McMahon, and it was like big headline on like whatever websites.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they show footage of Sarah at her home, and then they go to this weird graphic that says Revelation, with DDP showing up at Raw, and DDP says he's going to use Undertaker to get to the top.
Yeah.
Wrong plan if you're an aspiring talent. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to Taker's promo on SmackDown, and they use the old Dean Malenko theme music here, asking, who in the hell is DDP?
Man.
Invasion dead. Invasion dead.
Well, it was already dead. They just...
Who in the hell is Diamond Dallas Page? Who's this fucker?
Oh, man. Okay, let's just talk a little bit about this first, okay?
Yes, let's.
I really do wonder if DDP was the plan all along for this stalker thing. Did they come up with the stalker idea first and then just suddenly
decide? I don't
think
DDP... Because DDP was one of those guys who had signed a big deal with WCW. Mm-hmm. And when it went out of business, he had the option of sitting at home for like 18 months and cashing that check. But DDP... A, he was much older, and B, the guy always dreamed about working for WWF. Mm-hmm. So he was happy to take a pay cut and come in here.
Yeah.
And I almost think that they resented him for the fact that he wanted to work for the WWF so bad.
Really?
And the story I had always heard was that when Vince and DDP finally signed the contract in his office, they signed it, Vince went to go shake his hand, and DDP was like, no, let's hug. And they hugged, and that is where the Austin-Vince hug deal came from during this time period.
Is that right?
That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's 100% legit, right. But that's what I was told, was that DDP was like...
Okay. Well, that would explain a lot if they were doing this angle anyway and had no plan of who it was supposed to be. Do you know who it was supposed to be before?
I don't know who it could have been. God. For all I know, maybe they were going to go in the Vince direction.
This was just another idea that seems to have been really fucked up by this whole WCW thing. Perhaps they already had this planned out for a while, but because of this invasion kind of interrupting everything, it just clouded things and confused things even more. I mean... Why Diamond Dallas Page? Like, this man's character... is nothing, says nothing, like a stalker, first of all.
Giving this guy a complete, like, this is not like this was fucking, you know, Chuck Palumbo. This was Diamond Dallas Page,
yeah.
Who WCW fans, it would have been like taking, you
Sting.
Know,
imagine, like, if Sting came in for WrestleMania this year against Taker, and
he was a fucking golfer.
Sure, the secret golfer.
He was an annoying singer who does soundtracks for Disney. You know, that's exactly it. It's like your WCW audience is tuning in here. You're presenting him with someone completely different. Turn this around if WWF had been purchased and you're a WWF fan going to watch Nitro and they bring out...
Taker.
They bring out The Undertaker as a choir singer.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
There was no thread of connection to the... previous character.
Not to mention that it's pretty well known that DDP was married to Kimberly at the time, who was way hotter than Sarah.
A great point.
The man...
Sarah was...
Oh,
man.
My God. And plus, like, even going into how DDP finally did his promo on Raw during the reveal, his motivation is just all wrong. He says that he wants to make an impact in the business, so he decided to go after one of the biggest guys. And how does he do it? How do you... By stalking the guy's wife.
He wants to make him angry. He wants to play mind games with him.
And he talks... His delivery also is nothing like that of a stalker. Nothing like that of a creepy stalker. In fact, it's nothing like a heel. The way he talks is very much like a baby face.
Make me famous!
He pulls a sign from somewhere in that first promo and then shakes fans' hands. He just comes across and then sits with the audience. He just... Everything he does is like...
He
screams baby face.
Like, you're putting this crazed pervert in the audience and... That should alone be nuts. And people are coming up to shake hands with the pervert. You know what I mean? Like, no one bought into this character. No one thought it was legitimate. No one had any shred of disbelief here.
And I just feel bad for DDP himself, because he really tried to make this work. It's his dream to work for the company, and it showed. And I just feel bad that this is what was given to him.
And then he was like a lot of guys that came over, just simply got labeled, oh, he doesn't know how to work. Fuck off. He doesn't know how to work. I watched him work plenty in WCW.
Goldberg.
Yeah.
With Bill Goldberg.
And that's where it's really funny because what's one of the criticisms that a lot of wrestlers say about DDP? About putting matches together.
What?
Well, if you hadn't heard, he would put his matches together like move by move.
Uh-huh.
And this was a knock on him in WWF that he would put these matches together like that. And they'd say, oh, you don't know how to work. And yet the same people will look at Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage as an all-time classic match.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sure. I don't understand the difference here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it works, if the audience responds, it works.
Yeah.
I don't care how you get there. It works.
Yeah.
If we do a great podcast, I don't care if you being so knowledgeable and entertaining is because you're a heroin addict. As long as it's good, it works.
Okay.
That was a horrible analogy, but you know what I mean? It's like, who cares how someone gets to put together a match? If it connects and it works, then it works.
Yeah, I understand.
It's like the X Division criticism. Oh, they just do all these flips and shit. They don't know how to work. But you have 1,000 people in the Impact Zone going nuts for Styles and Daniels and Joe from years back, you know?
Yeah. I think to understand that mentality, you have to really realize how much of a boys club this company is and how much...
Oh, sure.
How
that had a huge part to do with this.
How many politics figure into it. I mean, think about it, you know?
This guy, we don't give a fuck what you did before. You are at ground zero right now coming into this company. Start at the bottom.
If you're a guy...
And it's destined to fail if you're going to take your guys and treat them like this.
Mm-hmm.
DDP should have been a tip-off to every guy. If I'm Kevin Nash watching that... I'm not going in right now. I'll wait for when they need me and they come to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to them because then I'm getting something like this.
Yeah. And it's an observation that a guy like Sting has taken and kept to this day.
I know. And Sting has always said that one of the reasons is that I don't trust them if I go there of what they would do to my character. And you look at the Diamond Dallas Page example, he went from this to the motivational speaker.
And awful.
Not great gimmicks, but there you go. This was the start of his WWE run. And Paul Heyman comes over to interview DDP and says, you have a locker room full of WWF sports entertainers, and you've been very brazen with your actions. And before DDP can reply, a video shows up on the screen, Wei. And what do we see?
I think this is just...
DDP reading a newspaper and drinking coffee.
Yes.
And DDP is pissed. He says, my privacy is being invaded.
Oh, man.
The subtle hypocrisy.
Yeah.
This was lame. This was lame.
So lame because none of it felt real whatsoever. There was just... there's too much.
This was like creative lull during what was one of the most important time periods in history, and it was like the creative team had nothing.
Well, I think this was like another example of people trying to write too much and overthinking things and putting an entire trying to just create everything on a piece of paper rather than let reality organically build into something dramatic.
It came across like they were not. Like, it's not like here at King of the Ring, they knew where they would be come SummerSlam. It seemed that it was, well, this is where we'll be at for Raw and SmackDown this week. Mm. And it was just like week-to-week booking.
Yeah.
And that's a huge flaw here, is that you had problems with inconsistencies and characters that have these gigantic gaps of logic placed within them. That's what came across here. We go to the second match after 30 minutes of just complaining. And we've got Edge against Rhino in the other side of the brackets in the semifinals. We get an ECW chant at the start for Rhino. Once again, though, as Wei mentioned, two heels here. But Edge was, at this point, at least starting to turn. We get a spinning heel kick early from Edge. Rhino's on the apron. He gets dropkicked to the barricade and starts selling his knee. Then they fight on the floor. Rhino's thrown into the barricade. Heyman calls DDP a hypocrite for getting upset at someone spying on him. And... I just wrote, this program is so backwards. Rhino comes back, tosses Edge into the barricade, and then into the ring, takes the turnbuckle off, and Edge is selling the ribs here, which would be a match-long storyline. They bring up Rhino, setting him up for the gore by wearing down the ribs and attacking the ribs, and hits him with a running shoulder block, and then the Olé kick.
Did he? I didn't miss that.
He ran right across, so maybe it was originally the Rhino kick. Maybe not.
It was from Otani.
Yeah, but he stole it first.
Oh.
Rhino. Big splash off the top by Rhino for a two count. Edge mounts a comeback with a reverse neck breaker, and then he's Edge comes back with a sunset flip off the top rope, gets a two count. Rhino hits a spine buster. He's setting him up for the gore, but then Edge goes for a spear at the same time, and they collide in mid-ring.
Mm-hmm. That was really cool.
Yeah. And Rhino crawls over for a two count. Then we see an O'Connor roll. Rhino kicks out. Then he misses the gore in the corner, goes into the turnbuckle, and as he comes out, rebounds into Edge, hitting an implant DDT for the win. And Rhino, nasty landing on his neck for that implant DDT.
Hmm.
And then both these guys would have neck surgery. Rhino would have neck surgery like 6 months after this.
Wow.
And be out for quite a while. So, these guys were,
they're working hard.
Even at this point, like, a lot of guys had had neck surgeries by this point. But, when you see that main event with, like, the German suplexes that Austin was taking, like, man, what are you thinking?
Well,
you've already missed a year of your career.
Hey, it's...
Work smart.
What? I would ask this question of anybody who decides to go into wrestling, period. What are you thinking?
Then
good match, though. I enjoyed this match.
This was good for what it was. Yeah. I liked it better than the opener.
There were some good spots throughout. I thought they told a good story with the sternum being injured with the turnbuckle.
Yeah, for sure. And they show Spike Dudley and Molly from Heat earlier tonight and challenges the Dudley boys for the tag titles and says he has to go find a partner. Spike and Molly are then live backstage, and Spike says he's found a partner, but he's not going to reveal it. And the Dudleys walk in, call Molly a big disappointment, as well as Spike, and they just basically blow off the match that's coming up. Taz is with Chris Jericho backstage. I'm a big fan of Chris Jericho's interviews, but this was not one of them.
No, I really don't miss this version of Jericho.
Oh, it's just...
he talks like a teenager, and these are very obviously scripted promos.
This was incredibly scripted.
Yeah, with very forced delivery.
Yeah, Taz asks him about the rumors about going to WCW, and Chris says, well, now that WCW is a true boss, and it won't be so bad after all, he says, yes. I was aware of the rumors, but to answer your question, no. I wasn't aware you knew about the rumors. And this continued. And he says he's going to shut the hell up regarding these rumors. And I wrote, this is like every Jericho interview. Sorry. When he didn't address the rumors, I said, this is like every Chris Jericho interview now when he's asked about when he's coming back to the WWE, where he never, ever... Mm-hmm. Tips his hand, nor would he.
Yes,
I remember that was my favorite interview I did with Chris Jericho was the one where it was after his first sabbatical, and at the end of the interview he's like, "I've got one more question for you." He's like, "Oh, of course you do." I'm like, "Wait, it's not what you think. Is this the first interview you've done where you haven't been asked about when you're coming back?" And he fucking laughed. Like, yes, this is the first one. Very good. Yes, he gave me a 2 out of 10. So then we go to our tag title match way, and Spike Dudley, he spun the wheel, and it came on player's choice, and Booker T said, "You have a surprise partner," and they panned over to Kane.
Yes. Kane.
Again. Too many surprises with Kane this week, way.
It is always Kane.
Kane is the surprise.
Yeah, it's always Kane or our big show.
So we got the Dudleys against Spike and Kane for the tag titles. And they show footage of the Dudleys winning the tag titles a whole 3 days before this pay-per-view from Jericho and Benoit. Think about this, okay? Jericho and Benoit are going into the main event of the pay-per-view. Let's beat them 3 days before.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was Austin that really beat them.
I will say, they booked Jericho and Benoit so terribly going into this. It was like 2 weeks before. They just stopped programming them like building them up. It was like, and Jericho, I think, talks about this in his book. It was like Vince lost faith in this main event. He was like, these guys aren't going to draw with Austin. And in fact, on the go-home show on Raw, Austin did a show-long storyline with, it was either Tajiri, I think it was Tajiri or Spike Dudley, where they were going to get a title shot. And the whole show was based around that.
Hmm.
And it was like Benoit and Jericho were afterthoughts. It was one of the worst builds for a pay-per-view at a time when they didn't fuck pay-per-views up like they tend to do now.
Hmm.
Anyway, I just... So the Dudleys are your tag champions. Spike runs in. Kane comes in, hits a double clothesline to the Dudleys. We see a Frankensteiner or a Hurricane Rana delivered by Spike to Bubba and then gets on top with punches. Bubba then presses Spike up but tosses him to Kane. Kane tosses Spike back to Bubba, back and forth. Then they get the heat on Spike with a chance of We Want Tables. Quite sympathetic to Spike here. Kane, holy Christ, did this guy look big.
Sure. Any
ripped
bigger,
at this
any
point.
Bigger than usual?
Oh, bigger than he is now.
Yeah.
It's just... And his arms were just like something else.
Okay.
D-Von misses a headbutt off the top rope as Spike tries to reach Kane and makes the hot tag. Then we get a really awkward back body drop by Kane delivered to Bubba, which, just thinking about it in my head, Kane, back body drop to Bubba Ray.
Hmm.
Lots could go wrong there. And then it's followed by an even more awkward body slam where Bubba almost like fell down mid-body slam. Kane then goes for the pin, and this was terrible because D-Von was supposed to break up the count, and the ref, he has to just stop at three because D-Von was late, and the announcers try to cover, saying Bubba got his shoulder up, but the crowd just boos the spot that looked completely blown. Kane press slam Spike to the floor onto D-Von and Bubba. Then we see a top rope clothesline by Kane delivered to Bubba. Spike gets a two count. Then Spike hits the Dudley dog, but this time D-Von makes the save on time. They do the what's up spot to Kane, a double drop kick by Spike off the top. The Dudleys come back and hit Spike with the 3D while Kane is out, and they pin Spike and keep the titles.
Mm-hmm. I actually didn't notice a lot of the blown spots that you mentioned, so I just thought this was a pretty good match that turned out a lot better than what I was expecting, given the participants.
I mean, I don't think this was a train wreck. It was just a match.
The crowd was really into the near falls after the Dudley dog and everything, and Spike, as usual, worked really, really hard, bumping pretty much the entire match.
When the Dudleys are in with, like, opponents that can go with them,
Opponents that they can beat up.
Yeah. And get the heat on and really get a sympathetic baby face. It really builds well. After the match, the Dudleys get a table, but Kane stops them. He powerbombs D-Von through the table. Powerbombs D-Von and then chokeslams Bubba through the table and then sets off his pyro.
I didn't get. Why? Why would they do that? Why would you have just Kane lay out both champions?
Because Kane has to look strong.
So just want to prove that Kane is better than the entire tag team division.
You know what I draw a blank on is like they're in that whole invasion, like this the whole summer and into the fall. Where was Kane?
Kane was on Team WWF.
Was he?
Yeah.
I think I'm just drawing a. I was thinking about this. I should have looked it up, but I just like didn't even. Like Kane had no big program at all that summer or anything. He was just kind of a background player.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
Might have had an injury in there somewhere.
Wasn't he on the teams like the
I think he was on the invasion, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
He very well could have been there the whole time, but just wasn't really focused. And I like here he was just a makeshift partner.
Mm-hmm.
Kane carries Spike back to the locker room on his shoulders, so. Yeah, this was like, you know.
Why do you need to keep... I guess, you need to keep Kane's
They
strong,
do that a lot where it's
you
like,
don't need this, though. I don't think this helps.
It's a case of not wanting to take the titles off the Dudleys, but not wanting to put them on Kane and Spike, and therefore you want the babyfaces to... Or at least Kane, at least, not to come off like just...
I don't think he would have come off like that.
Well, they always have that paranoia.
Yeah.
You see that evident now. How many times do Cena and Orton ever get, truly laid out or something where they don't get their heat back or they no-sell it the next, Cena more so with just smiling it off.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to the finals of the King of the Ring, Kurt Angle and Edge, who would have an awesome feud the following year, but this would have been their first singles match on pay-per-view.
Yeah, actually, you missed the backstage segment with Christian and Edge.
Sorry, I missed a few things here.
Yeah.
One, I definitely don't want to pass over. First, Edge is backstage, he's holding his ribs, and Christian walks in, and they tease an argument between the two, and Edge thinks that Christian's just going to make excuses for not winning earlier, and Christian says, no, I just wanted to wish you luck in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely the seed had been planted here.
Yep.
Then they air another video of Diamond Dallas Page leaving his hotel and getting into his car, and they cut to DDP, who was like mic'd here. He says, I'm really getting irritated by this. I'm right here at the Continental Airlines Arena.
Everything was just so forced. And during his promo as well, he like they all throughout the night they were relying on their catchphrases. Like DDP was just constantly saying,
Make me famous,
Taker. He even held a sign up that said, Make me famous. And it's there's just too much reliance on catchphrases to make me suspend my disbelief to think that this could have been real at all.
The guy just wanted a t-shirt. That guy is an A1 marketer.
Yeah.
Then the highlight of the pay-per-view. We go to WWF New York with a just rough looking Billy Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Christ, has the road been tough on this guy? They introduce him as this guy won the King of the Ring 2 years before this show and just looks like shit on camera. Like, had sunglasses on to probably hide some bags under his eyes and who knows what else. He looked wasted here.
Mm. Yeah.
I never like to make accusations, but I would be fairly confident that they had to put this guy together for camera.
Mm.
And he's at WWF New York. They ask him about his thoughts on who's going to win the tournament this year. And he just says, I'm not even at the arena, much less in the tournament. Who cares who's going to win?
Basically,
at least he wasn't scripted to do some like babyface breakdown. That would have been more depressing.
No. And it's a wonder why this place shut down. With great promotion like this, come to WWF.
We're sending
New York.
You the loser who was an absolute mistake in hindsight.
Yeah.
That would be a fun King of the Ring to review, the Billy Gunn year. At least not only did we get 3 Billy Gunn matches on pay per view, I mean, the talent depth in 99, as hot as the company was. The talent was like, man, some of the matches were just so
Did we not review that show?
No, we haven't reviewed that one.
It's all a blur to me.
So then we go to Kurt Angle and Edge in the finals of the King of the Ring. And that became kind of Billy Gunn's gimmick after this, was that guys just shot on him. They would just make fun of his failed run and his push not working. Uh-huh. And they just kind of made him their...
And then,
guy to make fun of.
And they gave him the gay gimmick,
which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That was a career revival for the guy.
Yep.
Fuck, he was teaming with Big Show as like Shogun at one point. Remember that?
Yes.
It's horrible. Shogun. Like, that is the lowest of the low. Like, they were opening up metal.
Uh-huh.
And when Chuck came along, Billy Gunn should have been thanking God for this gimmick, which I love that gimmick.
Yeah.
Those two were great together.
Shogun.
Yeah,
great.
A lot of people will always point out, they're like, there were no Lenny and Lodi. I enjoyed Billy Gunn and Palumbo more than Lenny and Lodi.
I did too.
Yeah. Go to Kurt Angle and Edge in the finals. Edge is out selling the ribs. Angle doesn't want to let anything get in the way of their... Is this was
Angle
backstage?
Angle, right before the match, grabs the mic and cuts a promo.
Oh, okay, this was in front of the arena then.
Yeah.
He says he doesn't want anything to get in the way of their friendship. Says he has a street fight, and realistically, Edge isn't beating him tonight. Edge should just forfeit and avoid the embarrassment and help his friend out. And reading this, it sounds like such a lame promo, but Angle's delivery was so good. He came across as like the most snide prick.
Yeah.
Like, he legitimately felt he was doing a favor for his friend here. Like, you are going to be embarrassed here, and I don't want that to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
It was just... really, really well delivered, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was good, as usual with Kurt Angle, and this, of course, just sets the stage for the match ahead.
I have so much appreciation for, I think even more now, of how Angle transitioned over. Not so much the wrestling, which was alone incredible, but, I mean, how many, like...
How comfortable
he
was on the
local
microphone.
How many local, like, fighters do we interview who are like, it's the sports mentality where, man, there's zero charisma to draw from these guys. And it's like, Kurt Angle was you're an Olympic gold medalist. Your life is nothing but training.
Mm-hmm.
And how did he have this personality in there?
I don't know. I really don't know. You could say the same thing about his wife.
Maybe they just cut promos on each other at home.
Probably.
Then they got too serious and they divorced.
Uh-huh. No, it's quite amazing. And he was really destined at this point to become one of the best ever.
Like, this, it's just his transition to pro wrestling. It's just, mm-hmm. it's unbelievable.
Yep.
And there's very few who you can look at who made the transition this seamlessly. Like, you mm-hmm. have, like, Jun Akiyama and Owen Hart come to mind. But
yeah, not to even
so
think.
Different.
But just even completely ignoring the fact that he was an Olympic wrestler. Like, never mind the transition. This guy, just for anybody, is a great pro wrestler. Is a great pro wrestler still.
To consider that he could drop the ego about having to do jobs, which was
yeah.
the reason he didn't come in initially in 96. He just didn't want to lose to people. And then be able to just completely drop that aspect of his life
mm-hmm.
to come in like that. It's really amazing. And I wonder what would happen today if he came in. I mean, he had a lot of leeway to develop this character and get over on the mic. And if this guy was given, you know, scripted promos and stuff, I don't know. It's just, he was able to find this character that took a year, and it was just a well-developed character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think that's an issue with some people now.
Hmm.
And just, you know, that's why you have one-dimensional characters. The match starts off after Edge decks Angle following the promo. Edge takes a belly-to-belly over the top to the floor, and then Angle stomping on Edge on the floor. Angle continues to work over Edge in the ring. We see a series of suplexes, rear chin locks. Edge is then tossed over the top rope, and the whole first portion of the match is Edge sell here. Edge then finally makes a comeback. He avoids the Angle slam. Angle blocks an implant DDT. He gets the ankle lock, but Edge counters with a roll-up, and then Edge hits the compactor. And at this point, Christian runs out, and the referee doesn't see Edge pinning him as Christian's on the apron, and it leads to a roll-up near fall for Kurt. And this is when the match really picks up at this point. You have Christian on the floor here after he failed to, I guess, distract anybody, and then Edge goes for a lariat but takes out the referee. This allows Angle to get the tap out with the ankle lock, but the referee is out. And then who should run in way but Shane McMahon, and he appears in the ring. He spears Kurt Angle, and it leads to Edge hitting the implant DDT and getting the win. And Shane is just cheering like an absolute nerd in the crowd. I vomited on my television set at
yeah.
this finish. I fucking hated this. It's like Edge won with the help of Shane fucking McMahon.
The powerful spear of Shane McMahon was
this
enough.
This was the fucking worst.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. I mean, the worst was to come. But absolutely.
I thought this was pretty bad.
I found the finish to be quite overbooked. What my problem is, and I mentioned this earlier, is just that the focus was completely taken off of the King of the Ring win itself. At the end of this, they stopped doing the coronations, and so you really had no mention of the King of the Ring whatsoever. They just were focusing
strictly.
They won
the Stanley Cup.
Yes, and they were just strictly focusing on the Shane McMahon Kurt Angle storyline, and Edge just happened to win the King of the Ring.
So, I'll say the finish ruined this for me, this
sure.
match. And this was not one of their better matches.
It was not memorable at all.
They weren't given a lot of time either. They
yeah.
got 10 minutes here, plus all the run-ins and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really watered it down.
By this pay-per-view, though, the King of the Ring itself had really lost all its luster. I mean, you know, coming off of a Billy Gunn and then, you know, even Kurt Angle to an extent. Like,
I think people still perceived it to mean you were getting a push.
Yeah, sure. Yes. But what I mean is they only showed the semifinals in the finals here. You only got three matches pay-per-view branded King of the Ring.
Well, they dropped that mainly because the ones where they do the full-out tournaments,
mm-hmm.
They didn't draw as well on pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
Even though I was a fan of seeing like a whole story told on pay-per-view. I mean, it's a very easy story doing a one-night tournament. I like the eight guys, but it didn't draw as much, and by reducing it to four, you could do other stuff
okay.
like street fights, title matches,
see, but then,
and have a fuller card.
Well, then I guess that is an admission in itself that they don't care so much about the winner of the King of the Ring.
It's all in how they follow it up. I mean, if you know, the guy's presented as, you know, the King of the Ring and he is booked at a higher level, then it did push him in front of the fans. It's at least telling the fans, this is the guy we're getting behind now. And
mm-hmm.
if they drop that, then, yeah, it does hurt it. But, I mean, with Edge, I mean, this guy eventually made it, but it would be years and years later.
And
I don't think
have,
you can point to the King of the Ring as the turning point.
King of the Ring had nothing to do with
really
it.
It's really just another pay-per-view for
yep.
the guy in hindsight. Taz is with Chris Benoit, asks him about the WCW rumors. And Benoit says, "What the hell kind of question is that?" And then says, "It's actually a pretty good one."
Yeah.
This man should never talk.
Did they tease this? Did they follow up with the storyline after this pay-per-view?
Nope. Never mentioned it.
Oh, with Benoit and Jericho?
Benoit was done after this pay-per-view. He went for neck surgery like 2 days later. And Jericho, I think they continued with it, and it led to Jericho joining the... Because when we reviewed it, we reviewed these Raws afterwards. As I recall, they did a deal where people were skeptical of Jericho's allegiance to the WWF, and he wanted to join Team WWF to prove he was with them. And that's how it led to him being part of the team. So that's how they followed it after this. But not like it was a serious, memorable program.
I don't understand why Benoit and Jericho would be so vague with their answers. Why would they want people to think that they were possibly joining WCW?
They want to mind fuck with Steve Austin, the guy who was actually going to join WCW. Then we get DDP shown again at ringside looking nervous. Jonathan Coachman is with Edge, who says this reeks of royalty. Christian walks in, says, "I had just come out there to the ring to help." And Edge says, "Well, what other reason would you have come out there for?" Nice little line there.
Yeah, sure.
And that replaced the coronation ceremony.
Yes.
Then a promo airs away. I don't know what version of the pay-per-view you saw, where they were promoing the debut of Tough Enough this Thursday on MTV.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, the very first season of Tough Enough, The Road to Maven.
Hmm.
Kurt Angle is storming backstage, and this is an example of just laziness, I thought. This segment might as well have been called exposition, because that's all this was. It was Kurt Angle explaining out loud why Shane McMahon interfered in the first match to get him to the second match to weaken him for the street fight. And he's attacking stuff. He tells security guards that if any WCW guys interfere, he will have them thrown out and they will starve.
Well, hey, that's pro wrestling.
This was just, to me, like, you have zero faith in your fans understanding anything. You think your fans are idiots. That you had to actually do a segment explaining everything, all your actions from earlier.
That's what this whole...
I hate that stuff. It's just like no confidence in your audience.
Yeah, sure. Well,
I mean, like, Christ. God forbid we'd have to think and figure out...
You don't need to think at all. Don't need to think. Angle here, just poor guy, had to cut this promo after his match, and he flubs quite a few lines here backstage, just cutting, you know, just talking.
He's in the heat of, he just had two matches, wait, come on. Yeah. Do you know this guy, by the end of the night, would have worked 45 minutes?
Sure.
Fuck.
Which is like, you know, like if you're thinking about past King of the Rings, it's nothing out of the ordinary. They would typically wrestle three matches too, but the type, especially the final match that this guy would have, that is quite amazing.
They plugged the next pay-per-view coming up in July called Fully Loaded.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
And then we go to Jeff Hardy and X-Pac for the light heavyweight title. There are a chance of X-Pac sucks. And Heyman starts putting over X-Pac and his contributions to the light heavyweights in the United States.
Came out to our favorite theme song.
Uncle Cracker returned.
Uh-huh.
Yo, you dealing with the X-Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back. Oh, I know you hated that X-Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
This was really like the peak of, or nearing the peak of the X-Pac
hatred
heat.
Yes.
Yeah.
The go-away heat. I think that's the first time I ever heard the term go-away heat.
Or X-Pac heat.
Yeah.
And I think, really, it was largely due to the staleness of this character.
Yeah.
And how corny his mannerisms were in the ring.
They kept bringing up in this match how he hadn't even turned 30 yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you don't realize how young Waltman was when he got involved in wrestling. Like, even now, here in 2011, he's not even 40.
Yeah, he looks it, though.
Like, you would guess this guy based on, like, fuck, you were watching this guy, like, in Global in 91.
My point is, his work rate was always good. And so...
That was the thing. No one ever said this guy sucks in the ring or anything. He was a good worker.
But you just didn't want to see him because he was who he was. He looked the way he did.
The match starts off with Hardy hitting a flying clothesline off the barricade to the floor. Then he misses Whisper in the Wind off the top. We get an abdominal stretch spot that is reversed by Hardy, and then Hardy hip tosses Waltman to the floor. Crowd was not into the match. X-Pac misses a Bronco Buster in the corner. Then Hardy runs into the corner. X-Pac leapfrogs, and they just crash. Mm. This was Christina Crawford bad, this leapfrog. Hardy then hits the Whisper in the Wind for a two count. Total lack of heat here. Hardy is then delivering punches on the turnbuckle. He comes down, and he takes the X-Factor after punching this guy in the face multiple times. And the referee counts three, but then sees that Hardy's foot is on the ropes, and the match continues. What a stupid spot.
This was odd. Yeah, usually the referee would notice the foot on the ropes before the three count, but they actually count it to three, and then they let the match continue.
Like, to me, that's a spot you could do as a big finish, to have a controversial finish. Like, why throw it in this nothing match?
Or not do it at all.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have done it. And it's not like you can say this was a mistake. It was like X-Pac was pinning Hardy in this sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hardy comes back with a jawbreaker, climbs to the top, gets crotched on the top rope. Then X-Pac comes up, gets shoved down. Hardy hits the Swanton. Extremely underwhelming match, considering who was in this.
Mm, sure.
Yeah, I didn't like this match at all. William Regal is in...
not terrible, but...
I would say I would have... You know, I totally blanked trying to remember this match. It was just like thrown in there probably the week of or something. But, you know, Jeff Hardy and Sean Waltman, I mean, you would think that would be a really good match. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was below average. William Regal's with Tajiri in his office. And this was when Regal was the babyface. He was babyface at this point,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Steve Austin walks in. He can't get his cell phone to work, and then he has to use a landline. So he calls Vince McMahon, and he says, it's Steve Austin.
Yeah.
What?
No. Well, he was doing his comedy here. That was what was... There's just so many things wrong with the scenario, okay? You have this. You have your world champion.
Your top champion that Stone Vince McMahon doesn't even know who it is.
Yeah. Anyway,
I hated the Steve Austin comedy run. I'm sorry. He was entertaining at times, but man, did I think it was counterproductive to his character.
Well, he's playing a heel here. He's siding with Vince McMahon, and he's doing comedy. That's three things that you should never, ever do with the Stone Cold Steve Austin character.
He tells Vince about the Benoit Jericho rumors, and William Regal gets on the phone to confirm those rumors, and Austin says that he needs Vince to come to the show. And he's in Connecticut, and Vince is apparently going to come to the show.
Yes.
Another angle that would have zero payoff.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to Diamond Dallas Page. More videos of him from earlier in the day. And then he finally just gets into the ring, yelling that Taker isn't getting to him. And he calls him out again. And this time it shows a video of DDP arriving at the arena earlier in the day. The camera's turned around. And we did get one reveal on the show, Way. The camera person was...
Sarah
Undertaker,
mm-hmm.
as they would call her on television.
She is just awful. All that.
Oh, and then she spoke.
Yeah, all that for this shitty reveal. What did she say?
She says, DDP, it's now time for you to become famous.
Oh, God.
And Undertaker comes out to his Limp Bizkit theme. And then we got the longest beatdown in the history of beatdowns. Undertaker mounted DDP. Delivered some ground and pound, stomped him in the corner. Heyman says, Heyman, I think, was just trying to salvage this bigger storyline and actually said, this is more of a personal issue than WWF versus WCW. Like, he tried to completely separate these two. It's like, guys, don't hold this against our bigger business that we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah.
Like, this to me was the invasion just... crumbling away right in front of our eyes.
Yeah,
this was the first major interaction between WWF and WCW. Mm-hmm. This was how it was presented to us first.
Yeah.
How could you have any faith in these fuckers when this is your introduction to WCW with the top guy at the point in the company? Mm-hmm. I mean, DDP was leagues ahead of, you know, Lance Storm and Palumbo and whoever else you had seen thus far. Who would come in at this point? Lance?
Palumbo, Stacy Keibler. I don't even know if... I think Palumbo and O'Hare came in, and then Stacy Keibler.
Keibler. Yeah. DDP was your biggest guy by far.
I don't even know if Awesome was in here yet. when Awesome won the title, the hardcore title?
I think came in anyway, like the next night or something like that. Yeah, but whatever. DDP with the biggest guy at this point.
Well, yeah, this was really the first dream pairing, like a legitimate dream pairing that fans would think of when they think about who they would want to come over from WCW. He was the first main eventer to come in, and given this great, great feud, great beatdown.
Sarah comes out and she's filming this. DDP is thrown into the timekeeper. DDP's lone hope spot. They gave the heel a hope spot, everybody. Uh-huh. Unbelievable, the booking of this. And he delivers it to the ribs and the back, and Taker sold this by spearing DDP into the announce table.
This was just like shitty, unrealistic brawling with absolutely no drama, and I don't think it served any purpose whatsoever other than to embarrass DDP and, by extension, WCW.
This was like, ugh. Jim Ross, fuck. This is like 95% Undertaker in this fucking beatdown.
Well, and hold on. It was 100%. What do you mean?
He got the two chair shots. That's what I'm basing that on. And Jim Ross says, DDP giving the Undertaker more than he anticipated.
Oh, God. Oh, further.
This angle's fucked. I know. Just fucked.
Absolutely.
And
Sarah out here filming this whole thing just like makes things even worse, because here's a woman who I'm supposed to be sympathizing for being almost stalked and by this guy, yet she's just out here bullying, basically, like humiliating and bullying this guy.
DDP wants a timeout, takes a boot to the face, and just falls over the top rope, landing terribly on the floor. And then he just ran through the crowd. They booked him to run away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's think about what the storyline was, okay? DDP, having just been in WCW, is now wanting to join the WWF, and so he stalks the Undertaker's wife so that he could challenge him. Now he gets his chance to challenge him, and he realizes he's absolutely no match whatsoever. He was completely unprepared for this. For how powerful the Undertaker was.
This was, you know, everyone points to that Tacoma, Washington Raw with Bagwell and Booker. I look at this as even worse.
Well,
this was like your first impression.
Yeah.
This was your first impression of this group. Like, imagine if you put the night they put Hogan with Hall and Nash, mm-hmm. and they paired them together, and the baby faces came back and just beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Like, this was your first major angle with a WCW performer. Like, why did we even need this storyline? Because the Undertaker didn't have something to do at this pay-per-view?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Put the Undertaker and Kane against the Dudleys. Put the titles on those two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, this was just so... This was like WWF was booking this as if DDP was working for the competition.
Yeah.
And had failed to realize, wait a minute, we bought the competition. We were going to make money off these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been 10 years since this happened. And in those 10 years, I don't know if they've necessarily learned that lesson.
Like, imagine when you went to watch, like, Alien versus Predator or, like, Freddy versus Jason. If the first scene, they beat the fuck out of one of them.
Yeah. It's a complete squash.
Like, I can't believe this to me was just horrendous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Horrendous. I can't say how much I hated this.
Yeah.
But the next match would come close. Steve Austin is shown waiting in the parking lot with this security guy who was way over his head with a camera in front of him. The security guard tells him it's 90 minutes to get from Greenwich to East Rutherford, New Jersey. Can we confirm that on Google Maps with directions?
Yes, but we won't.
Okay. And comically terrible acting from the security guard and Brooklyn Brawler. Sorry, that would come later. Austin just waits. Then a video airs for Angle and Shane McMahon with each trading Angle slams on television. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying that as a match, this did a great job. Crowd loved this match. They were into all the stunts. My problem was beginning, middle, and end. is there was one consistency, and that was Shane McMahon was in this match.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys can all write into me and tell me how Shane McMahon takes all these big bumps and he does all this stuff. You know what? There are probably 15 other guys who are on the roster at this point who could have done this match that are not allowed to go out there and...
More than 15.
Well, I'm being generous here, okay? Lots of guys could have had this exact same match with Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
And you could have gone somewhere with. Mm-hmm. There is no upside to Shane McMahon being booked 50-50 with an Olympic gold medalist.
No, yeah.
This, to me, is comparable to me being in the ring with Kurt Angle. Do you think anyone would fucking take me seriously against Kurt Angle in the ring? And that's where I'm done. Shane McMahon does not look like an athlete. Mm-hmm. He does not act like an athlete. And here I am to believe that this guy is 50-50 with Kurt Angle?
In wrestling.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That was my biggest problem, and I hated this.
If the WWE themselves, if Vince himself can't buy Evan Bourne ever beating John Cena or Randy Orton, how should I accept Shane McMahon being competitive against Kurt Angle?
Like, this guy's wearing a giant baggy baseball jersey with baggy pants.
And he gets...
Looks like a guy I'd go to the gym with.
Well, listen, he gets fans on his side because he's able to do so much. He's able to pull off shooting star presses.
Exactly.
He's able to fall off of Titantrons.
You put Edge and Rhino in the same position and they let those two get 25 minutes, 30 with entrances. You can break glass. You can break kendo sticks on each other. You can do color. Yeah, a lot of guys can get over when you're given every shortcut in the book. Mm-hmm. And I'm not faulting them. They booked this to get the best result possible. But my problem was they shouldn't have been booked to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Not taking anything away from Shane McMahon. Like, this was legitimately hard.
Tremendous credit to the guy. He killed himself in this match.
He's a very tough guy.
I mean, he was in a position, and it's not like he fucking just dogged it. I mean, he worked hard here, but my God, what is the upside to this? Is Shane going on the road? Is Shane headlining pay-per-views for you?
Listen, the upside, I guess maybe they were thinking that this would somehow bleed into the interest for the invasion, but this absolutely had nothing to do with the invasion. And thinking back to this match itself, I don't even consider this as part of the invasion storyline. I don't think of it as the same thing.
How much better would the invasion kicked off if Shane had hired DDP to come in here and do 20 minutes with Kurt Angle, where at the end of it, yes, DDP loses, but you at least have respect for the guy and you take him seriously. That's simple. Why does Shane have to have physical cred? He's running the company.
I completely agree.
It's like Paul Heyman working in ECW.
Yeah.
Like, put DDP in this match. Yeah. You give him 20 minutes with Kurt Angle, that's going to be a great fucking match.
I completely agree with you. What this match reeked of was just... the boss's son basically allowing his son to do whatever he wanted, and that's what this was largely.
Let's go through this match. Angle immediately takes down Shane. He's controlling him, out wrestling him right away. Shane hard weighs him right above the right eye, and Angle is bleeding. And Angle gets on all fours and allows Shane to have his way here. Sounds dirtier than it's implied. They go to the floor. Shane runs onto a barricade and delivers a back elbow to Kurt, then a flying clothesline off the barricade over the announcer's table. This is when Shane gets the kendo stick and attacks Angle in the ribs and the back. Angle misses a lariat, hits the post, and then a clothesline over the barricade is delivered to Angle, who takes a series of arm drags into the barricade, and Shane is working on the shoulder.
Listen, like, the brawling and the weapons, I think, are fine for Shane. I can buy it. But it's when he does the actual wrestling. Like Shane, he maneuvers out of a... Kurt has a rear waist lock on Shane. And Shane McMahon maneuvers out of a German suplex. I don't care if Kurt Angle's... They tried to explain the reasoning for this, and they tried to explain it as, you know, saying that Kurt Angle had already wrestled two matches in a day. But I don't care. Like, Kurt Angle could wrestle for a week straight, and he should still not be giving this much to Shane McMahon.
Shane delivers this really shitty tackle into the steps, and you could visibly see Shane talking to Kurt after that one, probably saying, I'm really sorry. I've fucked you up a lot in this match, and it's only been 5 minutes.
Is this was that the spot where Kurt legitimately broke his tailbone?
Did he break his tailbone?
Yeah.
It was probably that spot.
Yeah.
Because he landed nasty into the steps.
There's this one, and then there's a spot on the with a suplex right on the.
I didn't even know he broke his tailbone in this match. That's interesting. So after this, McMahon grabs this wooden board along with some garbage cans and garbage lids. I hate these garbage cans and lids. It just reminds me of that hardcore title division where it changed 5,000 times each show.
Mm-hmm.
I hate garbage can lids. Seeing them.
Yeah. But I get annoyed. For Shane McMahon, though, I agree.
He should have been using weapons.
Yeah.
You're taking on a human weapon.
Strictly weapons. That's what this guy needs. You shouldn't be trading wrestling holds with Kurt Angle.
We see Shane apply the ankle lock to Kurt.
It's like he's play fighting in a playground.
This was
imitating his favorite wrestlers.
It's like seeing two like marks like wrestling at a fucking, I don't know, park.
And then what was to come?
McMahon applied the sharpshooter but fell over while he was applying it. Then McMahon did his fucking shuffle with these right hands. I hated that fucking dance.
I never understand that. I don't understand.
Quick on his feet. He's a boxer.
Yeah, I don't understand doing that. Whatever. Anyway.
Oh, then McMahon misses a shooting star press off the top.
But I have to say, once I saw that move, that's really the part of the match that really got me personally on his side. And I gained a little bit of respect for him because he was able to perform this move and make it look really nice. This was like a legitimate physical feat.
See, it's funny because I had the opposite reaction where when I saw that, I was like, if Shane can do this spot, is this really that incredible a feat?
This guy in that shape
can do a shooting star press?
I would say it's still quite impressive. I think at this time especially, the shooting star press was still quite rare and very protected. You know, you only saw Billy Kidman do it. No one else.
And then we saw he misses with parts of the garbage can. They get dumped to the floor. Angle dumps him with a fireman's carry, and then they fight up down the ramp. Then they fight in front of the glass. And this was the series of spots that I think are the most remembered, mainly because of those PSA ads that they would run where they would always show this about some nasty stuff here. Angle delivers a belly-to-belly suplex to Shane into the glass, but it doesn't break. And Shane just lands on like his head.
And you could hear the thud.
This was gross. There was no padding. And I just thought, well, it's like they really gimmicked this shit up. And then I would continue to watch. The second suplex, it does break.
Glass shatters.
Fucking legitimate glass here.
Yeah. They're bleeding.
These idiots. Why would you use real glass? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. The stupidest thing I've ever heard. Almost as dumb as Bill Goldberg. Remember when he put his hand through the limo?
Mm-hmm.
They gimmicked it, and he said, no, I want real glass. And then he missed like 6 months. Like, why? It's pro wrestling, you fuckers. Like, man. The shards of glass are like all over them. They're bleeding all over their arms and shoulders. Shane's probably out cold at some point in this from landing on his head on cement. Fucking cement.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to another series of suplexes where they're behind the glass and Angle goes to suplex them. Again, it doesn't break.
Ugh.
And then, fuck.
At this point.
Second time, doesn't break.
At this point, it's just the first time it was like, once they did break the glass, I was thinking, wow, man, really, this was actually pretty cool. Then they do it again, and it doesn't break.
It was uncomfortable.
It was just kind of stupid.
The third time, he just tossed him through and it broke. But it was like diminishing returns here. It was like, okay, you got the big pop when it broke once. Why do we have to do it again?
It's tough to watch, but I will say, though, like,
the reason this match stands out so much, and the reason why so many people love this match, is because of this. It was because of these spots. It's, you know, it, you look back at a match like this, you look back at a match like Hell in a Cell with Mick Foley. These, you know, a guy is legitimately hurting himself. And
is that applauded? Is that good?
Yeah, sure. By I mean, depends what type of wrestling fan you are. If you're a fan of, you know, more like the hardcore, because there is a lot of drama there. When you see Masato Tanaka take 10 chair shots to the head, you are respecting his desire to hurt himself for the entertainment of people.
But again, I go with the fact this is Shane McMahon. Mm-hmm. Did Shane get it? Is Shane remembered in anywhere close to the sense of Mick Foley?
Not at all. Well, for this match, yeah. People will always remember this match when they think of Shane McMahon's wrestling career.
And how does the company benefit from that? I mean, is the guy
Shane McMahon? Well, I don't know how many T-shirts Shane McMahon
is
selling.
This is such a fantastic spot on a pay-per-view that you could have put somebody to get mileage out of. There was no mileage to get out of Shane McMahon.
Yeah, well, he's the boss.
The goofy guy that dances around.
He's the boss's son, you know. He wanted to
That's the reason I can't...
He wanted to be a star.
Enjoy this.
He wants to be Mick Foley.
We should also bring up another interesting spot, which could almost, you know, talk about this glass and explain it a bit further. A few months before this, the New Jersey Commission had actually outlawed what they called death matches, and mainly targeting like combat zone wrestling and these indies doing like light tube matches and glass and all this shit. And then WWE comes into New Jersey and does this match with real glass. Uh-huh. It was like just a fuck you to that.
Yeah.
And that was a big sense of debate here at the time, that they used real glass here, which was prohibited from the independents. Mm-hmm. But then WWE comes in, the big revenue generator, and they're given carte blanche.
Wow.
And WWE's done that in other places, like in Kentucky, where you're not allowed to fight in the crowd. They blatantly did that. There was another one, was in Baltimore, where it was one of them where you couldn't blade, and they purposely bladed just to, you know, look how big our dicks are, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not like one instance. There's a lot of these with commissions that WWE has had fun. Just they'll pay the fine just to prove that we're WWE.
Hmm.
Anyway, the match continues after these suplexes. McMahon gets put on a cart, and he's wheeled back to the ring.
At this point, both guys are very legitimately hurt, okay?
There's probably glass in their arms.
Glass in their arm. And remember, Kurt Angle has that cracked tailbone coming off of that suplex.
This is nuts. He wheels Shane to the ring, puts him into the ring, gets a two count. The fans are into Shane kicking out.
The fans are going nuts here, and that is because these guys are legitimately hurt, and thus there was a real level of emotion here. Seeing that Shane McMahon, at least, you could visibly see this guy was really killing himself.
Oh, yeah.
He could be dead. He could die.
Shane comes back with a low blow and hits Angle with a garbage can lid multiple times, and then hits the Angle slam.
Oh, man. I don't like that.
McMahon is then seated on the top rope, and Angle comes back, attacks him with the wooden board, and then he sets the board up on the top rope as a platform on the corners, and he stands on the board, lifts Shane up off the board, and delivers like a super Angle slam off the top rope and gets the win. So at least the right guy won, but...
Great finish. I love the
look. Oh, yeah. Very, very creative. I mean, hey, I don't want to hear just like... downgrade Shane McMahon's efforts here. He was put in a position where, let's be honest, this guy could have gone out there and coasted.
Yep.
And no one's calling him on it. Nobody outside of, you know, critics outside of the company. But no one backstage is railing on Shane to his face, nor is the creative team going to punish this guy. He could have done anything out here, and he chose to have a fucking great match that the fans were into, and this guy killed himself. But I just... there's no benefit to Shane McMahon being put over to this degree.
Sure. Well, I don't even know if they were really thinking about that. They're probably just thinking, you know, let's give Shane his moment. Let's give...
Why does Shane need his moment? Why does the owner of this company, fictitiously, need a moment? When you desperately need to get guys over on this WCW side, this company that you have buried on television for the last... decade telling your fans that WCW is inferior. Now you've got to bring them in and sell these guys.
Yeah.
This should have been DDP's role. I'm convinced of that.
Sure, sure.
And that's my issue with the booking of this.
Yeah.
Great effort by both guys. The crowd is applauding Shane as he's leaving, and Jim Ross says, "This is probably the last time we will ever see Shane McMahon compete." It would not be, everybody, because...
Oh, God.
Multiple times we would see Shane come back, including Randy Orton being white hot in 2009 and getting into a feud with Shane, which would severely...
Yeah,
damper his outlook.
With all that said, though, this is a really good match, I still have to say. I mean, all questionable booking aside, let's say everything was in line and Shane McMahon was set to headline WrestleMania. He was selling tons of merchandise, selling tons of tickets, okay? But as a match itself, I thought this was a very good match. It had the feeling of a Hell in a Cell or one of those King of the Deathmatch matches where like a real stunt show. You know, spot fest, stunt show, where guys are just legitimately hurting each other.
If you're into this, style of match, then it's one of the better ones you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
I hated the glass.
Sure.
I just hated that.
No, absolutely.
I don't know.
My biggest complaint about this match was just the difficulty to buy into any of Shane McMahon's actual wrestling spots early
in
the match.
That's why I couldn't get you have to be able to suspend your disbelief at some point. And it's a no-go with Shane McMahon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I'm looking at this guy and it's just not connecting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. But as a ragdoll type of underdog, that's what they should have focused on. And I think he worked in that role as a guy that was almost dying.
So they went 26 minutes in this match, everyone.
What really escaped my mind until reviewing this pay-per-view was that this was Kurt Angle's third match in the night.
Yeah.
And it's not a point that they really drove home in the commentary here.
No, not really.
But
it was almost like, to
impressive.
A degree, if they had, like, they positioned it as, he might have to work three matches. It's like he's almost the babyface here. This guy's over. He's worked twice tonight.
Sure.
And now he's in a street fight.
Yeah, I know. They were using that as the reason to explain why he was, Shane was able to get the better of Angle in certain parts. But sure, a byproduct of that is that it kind of makes him look like a babyface.
Then we go to Chris Benoit walking backstage in an extremely white corridor. Everything was white here. And then Chris Benoit is shown doing squats. Austin asks security if Vince has arrived. He hasn't. Brooklyn Brawler tells him his match is now. And they tell security to tell Vince that he's in the ring when he arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Vince I'm in the ring. And then we get a video for the main event. The storyline here was Vince told Austin, if you don't leave the King of the Ring as the champion, then we're through.
Hmm.
This was weird.
Yeah. The same storyline that we're going to see tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right. And that leads us to the main event. One heel against two baby faces. Mm-hmm. TNA main event.
You think that they're baby faces, but they're teasing heel turns.
Oh, yes. Teasing heel turns against the heel.
Whatever. Whatever.
Horrible booking on this show, I've got to say. Like, the worst, I think we've booked.
No, not the worst.
No, I'm saying of this time period. Like, of pay-per-views we've reviewed.
I wouldn't even say of this time period. Come on. The invasion was really still to come.
That's true. Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit.
They recap in the video that tag team title match featuring where Hunter tore his quad, which to this day I think is one of the best TV matches ever.
Oh, that was a fantastic match.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit and Jericho double-team Austin at the start. Austin tries to run through the crowd, and he's chased and attacked by the two babyfaces. Gets back into the ring, delivers chops to both, and stomps. The first pin attempt is by Jericho, and it's broken up by Chris Benoit, and then Austin attacks both. Early on, Jericho goes for the walls, but it's broken up by Benoit. Austin gets the heat on Benoit while Jericho's selling on the floor, and then he runs Benoit into Jericho on the apron and knocks Jericho back to the floor. Austin goes for the stunner, but Benoit blocks it and shoves Austin into the ref, and then Benoit hits Austin with the stunner, and Earl Hebner comes over, counts two. Benoit here, the babyface, then lays out Austin with a belt shot, and Jericho breaks the count. Benoit and Jericho then start to fight on the floor, and Benoit gets sent into the steel post by by Jericho. And then they'd start to work the traditional WWE three-way where a guy'd be out, the two would work a singles match, and then rotate. Austin went for the walls of Jericho, but it was countered. Jericho then blocks a stunner, takes a really weak Fez press from Austin. This is when Benoit brought a chair into the ring. He goes to swing at Austin, who ducks, and Jericho just gets rammed in the head with this chair. And then Austin stuns Benoit, and Austin gets a near fall on Jericho after the chair shot. This was a pretty heavy-duty chair shot delivered by Benoit. Austin hits a pair of suplexes onto Jericho, but Benoit comes back in from behind and hits five straight German suplexes, and then Austin breaks it up with a low blow. Unbelievable trust Austin had in Benoit.
Yeah, yeah, and they made many references in this match to their Edmonton match a month earlier with what was it, like 10?
Ten German suplexes.
Austin, definitely. Austin was working so hard in this match. He didn't really take one break. He would pair off with both guys and not, you know, do everything, basically.
Jericho then gets the walls on, and Benoit applies the crossface, so we had a simultaneous submissions on Austin. Austin taps, but they rule there can only be one winner, so the match continues. And Benoit puts the crossface onto Jericho, who counters and spins out of it. Benoit then hits a baseball slide into a chair that hits Austin on the floor. Jericho blocks a DDT and sends Benoit over the top. And at this point, Austin is on the floor, and Booker T comes out from ringside, and the fans are going nuts here. This was Booker T's debut with the company. Mm-hmm. He hit the scissors kick, and then a sidewalk slam through the Spanish announce table, yelling, WCW, some bitch! And unfortunately here, Booker got really excited, and he overthrew Austin on the table to the part you're not supposed to land on, and Austin just went right down and ended up breaking a bone or two in his back here. So some guys were walking wounded after this show. Benoit going for surgery,
top
Angle,
guys.
Shane, Austin.
Top guys, too.
Yeah, so... at a really bad time, too. So Booker got a huge reaction here, but I know a lot of people, they were upset here with Booker just injuring the top guy here in his first appearance. Benoit then hits two Germans to Jericho. There's a cradle reversal into the walls by Jericho, but Benoit reaches the ropes. Then Benoit gets tossed off the top rope. Jericho hits a face buster, and then he goes for a lion salt, which you knew Benoit was way too far out, and Benoit just... Jericho was just like totally pressing his luck here. He was lucky he was okay, because this was he was jumping more than three quarters of the way across the ring here, and it did not look pretty. The director cut the shot so that you just saw kind of the rope point of view that Jericho was jumping off of, so not looking good. Gets a two count. Then Jericho goes to the floor, grabs part of the announce table, and is attacking Austin's back, probably unaware that he had just broken part of his back. And both Chris's are on the floor. Jericho gets Austin into the ring, hits a moonsault, but Benoit stops the pin, and he hits his top rope headbutt, but Jericho pulls the referee out, and the finishing sequence comes with Benoit. First, he hit a belly-to-belly suplex off the top to Jericho. Benoit is selling his neck at this point, and I think this is the spot they use to...
explain the injury.
Yeah. And
Austin just comes over and grabs the pinfall.
Yeah, like a really odd finish. It was Benoit delivering this offensive maneuver to Jericho, and both are selling the effects of it. And yeah, Austin steals the pin.
Yeah, pretty anticlimactic.
Yeah, and these guys went long. This was like a 27-minute match. I don't know, something just... I thought this would have been better if you just picked either Jericho or Benoit and gone with a singles match. I just found this didn't click as a three-way with two baby faces in there.
Yeah.
And Benoit was working here with a broken neck.
Yeah.
So, I mean, absolutely. And still worked really hard.
Oh, I mean, it didn't feel any different from any other Chris Benoit match.
Yeah. It was just something didn't click in this match.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. The dynamic was all off here. You had basically the heel here play the underdog against two guys that were teaming up.
And Heyman even puts over, he's like, Steve Austin has overcome not one, not two, but he includes Booker, but three men to keep the title.
Absolutely. That was the other thing that I didn't even think. And my biggest complaint about this match was the Booker T debut. He meant nothing in the grand scheme
of things. That's the thing here. Like, you could at least make the argument if you were putting the title on a guy that here Booker T lays out Austin and Jericho pins Benoit, because that would have been that would have had to have been the title change.
Yeah.
That Booker here made an impact on his debut. Instead, he made no impact. What? He laid the guy out and Austin still won. You failed.
No, absolutely.
DDP and Booker T failed.
It really WCW thing seems like it was just coded over top of a script that was already written and loosely placed in spots that they would, you know, see appropriate to put in. Like, the whole storyline with Benoit and Jericho possibly turning didn't factor into this match at all. The Booker T thing didn't factor into this match at all. It just seemed like they already had this set script, set match in place, and decided to sprinkle some WCW references in it, even though it was supposed to be their main angle coming out of this.
You know, just watching this, like, I was just like, so many ideas I just like had watching this of like, A, you hadn't advertised anything with Booker, so why throw away his debut here? And what was really meaningless?
Well, they wanted that type of reveal. Like,
well, you know, if you were so concerned about television as you were with revealing DDP, why don't you have Shane do a promo backstage saying DDP wants to be the first WCW wrestler to enter Madison Square Garden? Well, he's not going to be, because I've got someone even bigger coming tomorrow night. Build some intrigue for the next night, and Booker T comes out in Madison Square Garden. Book these guys stronger. Like, Booker meant nothing in this.
No,
he was an afterthought. I totally forgot his debut until watching this, which tells you not memorable at all.
These guys were doomed to fail from the beginning.
So that was the King of the Ring. You know, some good work, but the booking was just the worst. I give this show a 3 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really, you know...
Hey,
good work is good work, and you know, the Shane Angle match, it came across. Maybe I'm downgrading it, but I thought the booking was just atrocious on this show.
Sure.
Like, WCW was such a mess here before it had even started.
It's
a credit to how much interest there was, the fact that they did the amount of buys they did the following month for Invasion with shitty booking.
It just tells you how much.
If they had their heads on straight, they would have cleared a million buys for that Invasion pay-per-view.
It just tells you how much interest there was just in the concept itself.
Like, just saying WWF versus WCW meant 700,000, but they had 775.
Yep.
That's crazy.
I think if anything, the storylines and the booking leading up to it probably hurt it, you know? Like, they could have done nothing and just advertised WWE versus WCW and probably did just as well.
Think about that. 2 weeks after this show was when they did the ECW angle. Like, after 2 weeks after this show, they had given up on WCW.
They were in panic mode. When was the Buff Bagwell
A week
match?
After, like, 8 days after this pay-per-view. Man.
Oh, boy.
So, just, to me, just such a big picture step backwards for the company was this King of the Ring show. And just the sign of, like, just how poorly things were at this point, booking-wise.
I give the show a 6 out of 10, and mostly for the matches. The matches were, I'd say they were all pretty, they're good to average. I don't think there was anything awful here, aside from that DDP Undertaker thing. But I do agree with you completely about some of the booking decisions here. In the grand scheme of things, they did no favors for themselves with some of these choices.
No. So, there you go. I'm sure we'll have a lot of debate coming out of this show, because I'm sure a lot of people, some enjoyed the show, maybe some didn't, but I just, you know, I've got to be fair here, and I mean, we will point out criticisms on, you know, a TNA show, and this to me, this was worse than just, you know, your typical bad television show. This was one of the biggest angles in history, and you're just watching it die. So there you go, everybody. We always encourage your feedback at reviewaway.com, or you can just go straight to facebook.com/reviewaway. Share the page. Get more people to like us, because we love having people like us. Do you want to get into some feedback,
Mr. Absolutely.
Tang? We'll go to this King of the Ring feedback. Let's start here with Chad Rivera. His isn't really about the show. Ryan Daniels. I remember my aunt and uncle not recording this event live for some reason. We used to get the Big Five pay-per-views live, and I saw it the next weekend with my cousins off of their VHS. I remember the feeling of amazement as Kurt Angle suplexed Shane McMahon through the glass sheet of the set. I thought the match would have been over after that, considering how bloody he was, but was surprised when it continued and ended with Kurt hitting the angle slam off the wooden board. A very memorable match. I also remember the surreal feeling of seeing both DDP and Booker T on a WWF pay-per-view. I remember feeling DDP and Undertaker's confrontation was somewhat anticlimactic as Paige just eventually slipped through the crowd. I didn't even grasp the severity of Benoit's neck injury until some weeks later. This was also the first time I specifically remember being impressed with Edge after he won the King of the Ring tournament. Overall, a fondly remembered pay-per-view that I got to enjoy with my cousins.
Thulani, Mabuza, and Cube. Kurt Angle versus Shane was brutal to watch, especially nearing the end when the two seemed to be botching spots. The unbreakable plate glass incident comes to mind. It was a decent show, but the only problem was that the invasion angle marred every pay-per-view during this period. Absolutely.
One other thing to note with the Benoit neck injury, I mean, they played it up on television that he injured his neck in this match, but it was actually the TLC match a full month before this where he suffered the, you know, kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. It was lots of damage he had taken, and it was that TLC match which did him in. So he was working with a bad neck for a month leading into this. And maybe that was part of the reason Vince wasn't as committed to promoting this main event, was he knew he was losing Benoit.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
But it was, not what it could have been. Mark Robinson, I first saw King of the Ring 2001 when I was visiting my aunt and uncle in South Africa. I was 14 at the time and found it on one of the sports channels when there was nothing to do one night. I remember it being a decent show for the most part. The King of the Ring tournament was interesting with it being four heels in the final spots, and they put Edge over huge, with him going over Kurt Angle to win, as Kurt was one of the top stars in the company and Edge was still thought of as a tag team guy at the time. But there are two things I remember in particular. The brutal Angle-Shane street fight where Kurt dumped Shane on his head two or three times after botching suplexes into the glass, which cut up both of them pretty badly. While it was another Shane is Superman match, it was also Kurt's third match of the night, so the psychology could say that Kurt was worn down from the two matches before. The other match I find memorable was the WWF title match, but it was for maybe the wrong reasons, as it was when Booker T made his debut, almost injuring Austin on an announce table spot, and the finish being seemingly rushed after Benoit seemed to put the finishing touches on his neck injury that would keep him out for almost a year during a super backdrop spot with Jericho. Looking back, I don't understand why Austin and Jericho didn't just call a new finish in the ring. I don't know if...
I think that was the finish.
Yeah. I mean, and say a lot about Benoit here, working on his bad neck. Not like he took any precautions in this match. The Germans, a suplex off the top rope. I mean, it's not like he was taking it easy on his neck. It was almost like, well, it's already fucked. I'm getting surgery.
Yeah, exactly that.
What a weird mentality.
Craig Brown, I remember really enjoying this pay-per-view. It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years ago. Great Shane versus Angle leading into this pay-per-view, and particularly the idea behind Shane helping Kurt win the first match of the night to fatigue him later. I loved Angle yelling at security backstage after losing in the final. It's like they walked up to the four guys and said, Angle is going to yell a lot, and you guys cannot react in any form. I miss Regal as commissioner. He was amazing in this role. Tajiri's role as a lackey through this time was great as well. While I don't like the idea behind the DDP angle, it still felt like a lost opportunity after Taker squashed him. It killed the feud and made the invasion angle fail even further. Imagine if this segment resulted in DDP giving Sarah the diamond cutter. The street fight is still good 10 years on. I cringe at the suplex Angle takes on the ramp because you can see it clearly knocks the wind out of him. Though the first suplex where the glass didn't break, you can hear the sick thud Shane makes is brutal. The main event of this pay-per-view could have been amazing with a little build, even if they took the Benoit Jericho going to WCW idea and presented it a week or so in advance, rather than at the start of the pay-per-view. I heard somewhere that part of Booker's lack of push when he entered the WWF was due to not taking good care of Austin on the slam through the table. Any idea if this was in fact the case?
Sorry, was that a question at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, he's just asking if Booker hurting Austin hurt him backstage.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely that. I mean, these guys were coming in on eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you do anything. Like injuring the top guy,
yeah,
not the way you want to start things off.
Yeah.
Let's go to some other ones here. Brent Woodleaf, finally finished Review Away today, and growing up as an ICP fan, although I don't follow them much anymore, but I marked out big for them back in the day. Even though their wrestling wasn't the best, I bought into the whole gimmick. It was very entertaining listening to y'all try to review this tape. John was constantly laughing at everything the whole way, which I enjoyed. I know there's no chance of it, but I'm recommending Strangle Mania Volume 2, which I've seen a million times. I can never get enough of the big bitch getting powerbombed on her back of her neck. Fucking love the shows. My week would be miserable without Review Away, Review a Raw to listen to at work. Mm. Well, thank you very much, Brent. One thing I just wanted to quickly note about, I want to just update everybody with the interviews. I'm very sorry about the skipping issue. It drives me fucking crazy, and I know it does Way as well. And we aren't going to be doing any more interviews on this current system. I think we're going to pretty much do all of them now on Skype, which sounds infinitely better, especially if the other person has Skype. So we apologize for the recent technical issues, and believe me, it's not like we're just trying to be lazy or just ignoring them. We're fully aware and trying to correct those so that you have as easy an listening experience as possible, because I know how much that could drive me nuts if I was listening.
Mm-hmm. Are we finishing off here?
Yeah, we can finish off if there's nothing else to get to.
Why don't we finish off with here. Brian Lindbergh just finished Review Away, and great job on a difficult review, guys. I really enjoy the interviews you've been including with the reviews. Also, I foresee a
Shane wasn't available this week, everyone, sorry.
Also, I foresee a Way heel turn in the near future, perhaps during Review and Impact. In recent weeks, Way has called out John several times for racist remarks like, why would you wish that I spoke in Japanese, and has had Pollock spill his San Pellegrino. Will Way snap and blindside John with some form of unusual object and promise to explain his actions later? Then, because it's on Review and Impact, the whole thing will be forgotten about before Review Away.
Ha ha ha. All right, well, thanks everybody for all your feedback. As always, you can post it up at reviewaway.com. And I think what I'm going to start doing is maybe making a discussion thread each Monday for the following week's Review Away. Because obviously we do it like midweek and give you guys more time to post and stuff and just make it more interactive for all of you. But just want to thank all of you for listening to the shows, whether it be The Law or any of our podcasts as well. And I had a ton of fun doing the Ustream broadcast on Monday. Way kind of just put that together in like 20 minutes. It was really incredible that, you know, at 3 in the morning, we had like 60 people, give or take.
With absolutely no promotion. It was just like, we're going to do the show live, click on it. And
yeah, like
it.
Super cool so. Doing it live. Like, yes, there were glitches, but I mean, I think that almost adds to the fun of it all, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're using here, you know, this anything. Free technology that, I mean, it's, it was a lot of fun, even with the pop-up ads. And we are planning, are we going to do this on Monday night, Way?
Yeah. Well, okay, we'll do it live again.
Okay. What time would you say is a good, you know, roughly, what time should people, because usually we get to the show around like 12:30 a.m. like Eastern time, between 12:30 and 1.
Yeah.
So you know what? If you're on Twitter or you're on the Facebook group, we'll keep you updated Monday night of when we're getting close to air, so that you're not waiting around for too long. But roughly between 12:30 and 1.
Yeah, but let's say 12. Let's say 12.
12?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Sure.
Let's shoot for midnight.
12
then.
Eastern.
All right, midnight Eastern.
So an hour after Raw.
All right, so that's going to wrap us up for this week, everybody. Of course, please join ReviewAway.com. Check out LiveAudioWrestling.com. Follow us on Twitter at Law Radio. And we do Review a Raw every Tuesday morning, late Monday night. You can tune in as well on Ustream. Fridays, we've got Review and Impact. Sunday night, you got The Law. And then, of course, Review Away every Monday morning. And next week's Review Away, it's going to be a huge review because it's Way's pick to decide what we are going to review next week.
Okay, well, I'm deciding right now, and I have decided that we will be reviewing Bash at the Beach 1994 featuring Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair with Shaquille O'Neal in Hulk Hogan's corner.
Oh my. All right, Hulk Hogan's WCW debut coming up next week here on Review Away. Let's see how his debut looks 17 years later.
Wow.
So that's going to be our review for next week. And as I said on Review and Impact, Ahmad Butt chose this song to end the podcast with. Because I don't know what to pick.